My Big Fat Apocalypse Wedding by Thursday Sisters. Honey Creek, Tennessee is going to burn. It has 17 years left. Jared built his first bomb shelter at age 6. Not a very good one. It was mostly fast food containers held together with tape, but he ran to the graveyard as he did every other afternoon, where he and Jensen would lay down and hold hands and plan for the end of the world. "It'll be great," said Jared, turning it in the light. "We'll stuff it with pillows and comic books and hot cocoa. I'll never need to go back outside." They lay on their sides facing each other, little red poppies dotting the field between moldering headstones. Jensen let go of Jared's hand to take the toy model. "What about guns?" Jensen asked. At age 10, he'd already enrolled in the Junior Sharpshooter League in the hopes of gaining the attention of Army recruiters. He liked the Army. They both did. The president and the kitchen TV assured them the nuclear holocaust would come any day now, and the boys fantasized about dying in each other's arms. Jared considered this. "Yes, we should have at least one gun, in case we need to hunt for food."
"Will there be bunk beds?"
"Why? We can just cover the floor with blankets and mattresses, bounce in the bed all day, sleep whenever we like."
Jensen lowered his voice. "But the same bed? Does that mean we'll be married?"
Jared looked up. Married was a far-off place, closely related but not as forbidden as virginity, which he assumed sat somewhere between Maryland and North Carolina. The moon had come out, and Jensen's face was all pinks and shadows in the setting sun. Jared set aside the shelter and took both his hands and pressed his mouth to Jensen's in a silent yes. After that, poppies bloomed wherever Jared went, but he wasn't surprised. He'd seen stranger things back home. 10th birthday. Jensen taught Jared how to French kiss. Sundays were spent in the back pew, languishing in each other's arms while the preacher explained global warming. In a town of competing eschatologies, Floodwaters Baptist Church took on a more practical view of the end times by going vertical and constructing over 100 treehouses inside a ring of reinforced oak trees, rope bridges crisscrossing so thickly that you couldn't see the sky from the ground level. Jared wasn't sure about the preacher, but the music beat the Church of Hard Rock that their mothers attended, where the faithful would one day be raptured to Elvis Presley's Slave Planet. After service, they lay in a hammock among the church's hanging gardens. Jared put his mouth to Jensen's ear. "I found something the other day." Jensen said nothing, coming back for another kiss, hands slipping inside Jared's shirt and circling his narrow waist. Jared continued, "There's a collapsed mine south of here. It wouldn't need a lot of work, and once it's cleared, we can start taking in supplies." Jensen's fingers found his hip, the soft flesh between his ribs, tracing a map of Jared's warm young body to be tucked away and thoughtlessly exploited once Jensen got the shower to himself. "Then I gotta go fetch a change of clothes." "No, you don't," Jared whispered, teeth sinking into Jensen's plush lower lip. "I like you dirty." 90. 13th birthday. The boys started taking baths together, and Jensen got top marks of the state sharpshooting competition, second only to a girl in Jared's class who trained at the Army base and considered herself the great white hope for the Daughters of the Confederacy. Jared slopped water over Jensen's chest.
"Cassidy likes you."
Jensen dozed, hot beneath Jared's weight.
"She been bothering you at school?"
Jared said nothing. Cassidy and her cronies had buttonholed him in the cafeteria that morning, taking turns to see who made Jared cry first.
"You two are so sweet. Do you let him put his dick in you?"
"Don't be mean," said another girl, tits jutting from her pink camo jacket. They all wore matching uniforms. Fatigues for the drill sergeant, bleached hair and no bras for their boyfriends. "You gonna invite us to the wedding, right?" "You know Jensen doesn't have any money. You gonna move into his mom's trailer after you get married? She gonna listen to you guys doing it?"
"What if she wants a turn?" said Cassidy, grabbing Jared's jaw. "I'd ride that pretty mouth."
Jared let them talk until the bell rang. After school, he stockpiled more supplies in the mine and heated water and filled the bathtub and waited for Jensen, where they now lay to steam. Jared smiled, slowly running a soapy hand along Jensen's cock until it swelled.
"I don't think Cassidy will be a problem."
1. 14th birthday. Jensen drove them to the Smokies and undressed Jared on the hood of his car and gave him his first blowjob as the sun set, clouds pillowed between the mountains like pink cotton candy. Jared lay in a sweat, yanking Jensen up until their mouths connected on the taste of his own cock.
"Do you have to go?" Jared pleaded, their foreheads pressed together.
Jensen had been accepted into special forces at Fort Benning, over 400 miles away, and there was talk of sending soldiers to Serbia.
I'll ride every day, baby boy, said Jensen, trailing wet kisses down Jared's throat. You'll wait for me? His finger slid inside Jared's virgin ass, readying him for the next round. Somewhere below the cloud line, Cassidy and her girlfriends were testing pipe bombs, and doves burst from the trees like an exploding dandelion. After Jensen left for basic training, Jared considered the problem of financing their future and started a modest drug trade in the local library. Most men in town worked at the abattoir, piling into a bus each morning and coming home with blood in their hair, and 50 cents for one of Jared's ketamine-laced cigarettes took the edge off killing floor tedium without breaking their wallets. Naked Lunch, Dorian Gray, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, all slid across the library counter with $5 bookmarks, until Friday when Jared borrowed his mother's car to resupply at a vet's office in Kentucky. The system worked. Jared got a little cheddar while he wrapped up school. The workers got some of their dignity back. Until the apocalypse came, everyone had to feed their families. 1993. 16th birthday. They clinked their beers to the first Rhodes Scholar hillbilly in the White House, and Jared looked up from Death in Venice to find Jensen before him, tan, lean, with an officer's uniform and a wicked glitter in his eye. He bent over to Jared, breath hot in his ear. My mom isn't home. They almost didn't make it to the bed. Rain leaked and dripped in frying pans all over Jensen's bedroom, but he cranked the heat up to 85 and lit the room with tea candles until their sweaty faces glowed, at first just their hands in each other's pants, and then Jared kneeling over Jensen's mouth, and then a confused silence when Jensen slapped something into Jared's hands. Jared blinked through the jizz fog, holding up a plastic cylinder, sky blue, with 10 different settings. Is this for a girl or a boy? Jensen unbuttoned his uniform, miles of mouth-watering brown muscle inside the shirt and tie. It's for me. They kept most of their clothes on, Jensen's slacks hanging off one ankle, Jared parting his legs to see the ripe red cock waiting for him. Jensen's fingers tightened around Jared's hair, guiding him, giving him patient instruction. And when Jared came up for air, he reached into his back pocket and pulled out a cigarette with a tiny red heart on the end, and lit up and bent down and shotgunned smoke into Jensen's mouth. It's from the graveyard, said Jared, smoke coiling and breaking around their bodies. I harvested the poppies that grow there. It'll keep us from finishing too soon. Jensen exhaled, pain he didn't know he had evaporating, as Jared licked the vibrator and hooked his arm under Jensen's thigh and kissed him as the first inch of hard silicone opened him. You want more? Jensen's chest caved in and out, cheeks flushed, hands slowly working his own cock against his belly. Yeah. They took it slow for the next 4 hours, Jared alternately fucking him with a toy and taking breaks for ice cream and flipping Jensen over to suck on his aching rosebud. Jared asked if he'd killed anyone. Jensen made a vague hand gesture. Jared asked for a turn. Jensen insisted they wait for their wedding night. The boy was so young, and he guarded Jared's innocence above all things. Lightning lit the rain in white pencil strokes against the window. Jared stared at the ceiling as Jensen twisted a lock of his hair. When will I see you again? Depends. They send me a lot of places, but I can request advance leave. Jared turned on his side and laid his hand on Jensen's chest. I've saved up money. I figure by the time I'm of age, I'll have a good bit socked away, he said, fingers buried in Jensen's shirt. It'll be enough to get us started. Jensen made some noises, unaware of Jared's side income. A good bit to him was $200 and a coffee tin, and Jared left him thinking as such. 1994. 17th birthday. The body count between Serbian Orthodox and Bosnian Muslims was in the thousands. Famine swept across Somalia. Serial killer Jeffrey Dahmer pled guilty to the rape and dismemberment of 17 people, whose skeletons he preserved in his Milwaukee home, only to escape punishment by having his skull cracked by a fellow inmate. The preacher at Floodwaters Baptist, after careful calculation of the weather fronts, announced the date of the end times, 1 week after Jared would turn 18. Jared called Jensen after church. I'm never going to grow up, he said, tears scrolling down his face. What's the point? Jensen slumped against the wall, phone cord stretched above him. He'd killed 6 men that week. He'd never even seen their faces. I want to be there with you, baby boy, but I can't get away. They're piling everyone into the school gym on the last night so they can do a countdown, said Jared, wiping his face with his sleeve. Please, can you ask for time off? 1995, 18th birthday. Jared stood beneath soft blue and red lights in a white tuxedo, poppies clutched to his breast. He'd spent all month readying the final orders, and by the time he'd flattened out the dollar bills and rubber banded them and stacked them in his briefcase, he had enough to buy him and Jensen a new trailer. Assuming anyone lived to see morning. But then, you had to have a backup plan in case the apocalypse operated on a different calendar. He looked around. Where was Jensen? Someone across the room pointed to Jared, and a handsome older gentleman walked up to him with hand outstretched. Mr. Padalecki? Yes, sir, Jared asked, extending his hand. A steel handcuff flashed, catching Jared's wrist. Detective Morgan. Drug Enforcement Agency, he said, the smile vanishing. I'd like a moment of your time. Hours passed. Jared cooked beneath a light in a windowless room with three shadows standing behind him, trying to sweat out names and locations. There were no lawyers. There were no formal charges. They hadn't even read him his Miranda rights. Detective Morgan poured himself another coffee. You seem like a good kid, he said, wincing at the hot coffee mug. The K-dosage you mix tonight is too low to get me excited, so technically speaking, we could fine you for selling untaxed tobacco and pretend I wasn't here. Jared stared at his shoes, poppies wilting in his hands. The detective bent forward. Or I could notice the wad of loose cash in the trunk of your car and write you up for interstate trafficking. He turned to one of the officers. How much you boys say he had? A policeman patted the briefcase. A little over 30,000. Morgan whistled. Not bad for milk money. Jared grit his teeth. I want my phone call. Morgan sipped his coffee. There won't be no phone call tonight. What there will be, he said, his voice hard, is a drop-off. One of your classmates has a 3 a.m. appointment with some folks I've been tracking from Florida, and you're going to show up with the goods and a shiny new wire under your vest. You'll have support. Your name won't be written anywhere, and you get to go home afterward. A red petal fell to the floor. The room stank of disinfectant, and Jared's eyes flicked to the briefcase. All his years of hard work as a policeman gently fondled the copper latches. I'll need a car. Jared walked out of the police station at 1:45 a.m. with a map and the key to an unmarked truck and a long crate with glassware stamped in black letters. He'd just opened the door when a warm hand landed on his shoulder and spun him around. Jared, said Jensen, folding him into his arms. I've been calling everyone. What the hell happened to you? Jared stayed close, lips barely moving. It's a sting, he whispered. Someone from school. They want me to get a recording of the deal. Jensen's brow knit, looking from Jared to the plainclothes officers in the next car. But why you? You ain't had any training, had you? Jared pursed his lips, afraid to say more with the wire on. Jensen gripped his hands. Tell me where it is. I'll follow you. If we get separated, I'll meet you at home. Home was the mine where they'd stashed all their survivalist gear, something no one else knew of. Jared pointed at the X on the map, a foreclosed fireworks shop on the state line where the deal would go down, and Jensen pulled him in for a searing kiss. This town is no good for us, baby boy, he said, red poppies crushed and scattered to the wind in their embrace. I know I ain't got no prospects, but I'm a good man, and I won't let no one else into my heart but you. Let me take you away from all this. Jared turned his head, ashamed of his secret life of crime. The money had never mattered to Jensen. Wait for me when this is all over, said Jared. I'll find you. With both sides of the Florida deal retaining anonymity through mail drops, Jared had only to speak a prescripted phrase, remain in his seat to collect the money, and let the cops take over from there. His headlights swung along the switchback road, the eyes of deer glowing white in the mist, and he quickly lost sight of the DEA support team. Two trucks idled in a field with car skeletons piled five deep behind a sign for Nervous Willie's Gas Guns and Fireworks. Jared rolled down his window and jerked a thumb at the crate in the cab. K is for quality? Three men stepped out of the first truck with crowbars, baseball caps pulled down low, while a shorter figure jogged up to Jared's truck with an envelope in her hand. Jared studied Cassidy, barely recognizable between the hat and the bandana. You missed the school dance. She froze, eyes flicking between him and the other men. Didn't know you were in the business. I didn't know your crew liked to party. Her eyes narrowed, still hugging the envelope. She took a wary step back. Fuck you talking about, man. K is for ketamine, Jared thought to himself. What else would it stand for?
He stared at her in confusion, then up at his rearview mirror, as the men tore open the crates and pulled up fistfuls of straw and hopped to the ground, newly minted Kalashnikovs in their arms. Jared's eyes tipped her off, and before he could suck in a breath, her gun was pressed to his cheek. "Get out and leave the keys," she said, pulling back the hammer with her thumb. "We're going to take a walk in the woods." The other man joined her, shining a light in Jared's face as he stood with hands raised. "What's up?" She felt around Jared's front, lifting his shirt and sneering at the wire. "Fucking narc," she said, pushing him forward. "Don't worry, he ain't armed." "He probably ain't alone, either." Her head whipped around. "Were y'all tailed?" "Nah, girl," said the eldest of the trio, clearly the leader, judging by his impatient headshake to the other two men. "Cops don't know these roads. Just take them out back and have done with it." She breathes shakily, gun trembling. "Okay. Okay, y'all load up. Won't take me but a minute." With the barrel pressed between Jared's shoulders, she marched into a car on blocks, Jared scanning the trees and willing Jensen's face to appear amongst them. She opened the trunk. "Get in," she said, one side of her mouth lifting. "No, wait. Take off the jacket." Jared shivered in the cold. "Why?" She got up close, little pink tongue lolling between her teeth. "So I can wear it when I climb on your boyfriend's dick tomorrow." Like the detective said, Jared was a good kid. He did not scream. He did not spit in her face. He did not grab the gun and shove it between her teeth and spray the car in a shower of pink pulp. Only in Jared's head. Instead, he grabbed the trunk lid and slammed it on her arm until it went crunch. "Sorry," he said, holding it down one-handed. "Jacket's a rental." Her mouth opened on a silent O, the gun dropping into the grass. And picking it up, Jared backed away with the barrel pointed at her. "Get in the ground and keep quiet," he said. "You still got the money. I were you, I'd catch a greyhound and go visit Mexico." The envelope fell from her jacket and tipped open, hundreds of shiny grocery store coupons scattering in the breeze like confetti. The last thing he saw before the fight started was his shadow tripling against her body in the light of the other men's flashlights. "There ain't no money." Jensen was in his car one street over when he heard shots, like someone hammering a nail into the mountain. The police had circled back, thinking they'd missed a turn, and it would be minutes before they found the murder scene. "Jared!" he shouted, racing from one corpse to the next and finding only strangers until he heard crying from behind a truck. He pulled his sidearm. "Who's there?" Cassidy crouched by the tire, cradling her broken arm. "Is he gone?" she whispered. Blue lights flashed, a line of cruisers illuminating the road while Jensen looked around in a panic. "Did you see Jared?" Men in DEA jackets jogged to them. "I didn't kill anyone. That junkie fucker did it and ran into the forest," Cassidy hissed at an approaching officer, then back to Jensen, pleading, "I wasn't going to kill him. I swear I was going to let him go." Detective Morgan looked up, but Jensen shook his head. "Jared's never hurt anyone in his life. He wouldn't do this." The police shrugged. Cassidy certainly hadn't told her friends she was purchasing weapons for the local militia, and there was enough blood on her clothes to confirm that this was just another botched gun run to be added to her domestic terrorist charges after they found the white power pamphlets in her trailer. Jensen left and spent the next few hours in the cave drinking coffee, not daring to close his eyes. A large bed lay with pillows and blankets and the petals of a rose bouquet he had fished out of a dumpster the day before. Before he'd enlisted, he and Jared had built blast walls out of concrete and wood framing, and Jensen fingered at the timber where he'd carved their initials inside a crude heart, picking over Cassidy's words, wondering if they were true. "Jensen?" He looked up. Maybe it was the kerosene lamp, the way it turned the bloodstains black against Jared's white tuxedo, against his hands. Tears sprang to Jensen's eyes. "What have you done?" Jared lifted his hands in supplication. "I didn't know they were buying guns. The cops told me I had to." "You had to?" asked Jensen angrily. "What did they have on you that you would risk your life like that?" Jared swallowed, eyes cast to the corner of the room. The word junkie swam up to Jensen's memory. "Were you selling drugs at the dance tonight?" Jared met his eyes. "I never spent a dime while you were gone. I saved it up if the police ever give it back." Jensen turned away and covered his face. The cave? The one place where he could escape from his work, the war, the dead bodies, the creeping resentment toward the West, suddenly reeked of blood. "They're going to come for you," he lied, to Jared and to himself. He reached into his wallet and pulled everything out and held it up without looking at Jared. "You need to hide."
Jared stared at the money. It wasn't the birthday gift he'd wanted. But then Jensen had given him 12 happy years, more days and nights and words sweet as kisses remembered after death than some boys ever receive in a lifetime. It had to be enough. When Jensen looked up, Jared was gone. At the top of the treehouse, the congregation of Floodwaters Baptist gripped each other's hands, their tears gleaming in the new dawn. "You mean," said one woman despairingly, "we have to go on?"